Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. The delegate fight for Florida and Michigan. Both states were stripped of their delegates when they violated party rules and moved up their primaries. Now, with Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama locked in a tight battle, the issue of what to do about those votes has resurfaced with plenty of passion on all sides. This hour, On Point, inside the explosive high-stakes battle that could decide the nomination. Later this hour, we'll touch down in Florida and Michigan. But first, joining me from Washington is Jake Tapper, senior national correspondent for ABC News. He's been out on the campaign trail with the candidates and reporting on the Florida-Michigan delegate controversy. Great to have you, Jake. Welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So this whole morass in Florida and Michigan, remind us how we got into this mess.
Well, it started when Iowa and New Hampshire started really taking prominence in the Democratic nominating contests, and other states, most notably Michigan and Florida, resented it. This year, they decided they were mad as heck and they weren't going to take it anymore, and they moved up their nominating contests. And they were told by the Democratic National Committee not to do so, that if they did so, they would be stripped of their delegates, and they didn't believe it, is the bottom line. I talked to members of Congress from both Michigan and Florida Democrats who just didn't think that the party would actually disenfranchise their voters by stripping the delegates from the convention,
and they did.
But the party went through with it, and that's basically where we are. And now everybody's trying to find a solution to the problem because it would not be fair to have disenfranchised two large states that the Democrats need to win in November, and because we didn't anticipate this. Nobody anticipated this, but it looks like we have basically a tie. Obama has basically 100 or so delegate lead, and it might be important to have contests in those states.
So what are the solutions on the table at this point, Jake?
There are any number of possible solutions. Right now, if I had to guess, I would say it looks most likely that there will be mail-in primaries, cost about $5 million. That way you're not disenfranchising soldiers from Michigan and Florida, and it's much more cost effective. It's a good way to figure out for the parties to figure out who actually is an active Democratic voter. But there are other options being discussed as well. Michigan discussed having a caucus, which was met with the stern rejection from Senator Clinton's campaign. She is, I think, something like 2 for 15 in caucuses, or something ridiculously horrible. And another possible solution, I think the Obama campaign floated the idea of having Michigan's delegates recognized and just splitting them down the middle 50-50. There was some crazy idea in Florida where you would do that for half the delegates and then the other half recognize what happened on January 29th in Florida when Senator Clinton won, even though nobody had campaigned in the states, and split them that way. But basically, there are all these mathematical constructs out there, but I think the bottom line is probably there will be this mail-in ballot.
So, well, is that the most practical and fair and affordable way then to do some sort of make-up election, do-over election?
It's definitely the most affordable. I don't know. You'll hear some pushback from some people who think that sounds kind of ramshackle. It sounds kind of low rent to do it that way. And the Obama campaign says, you know, they're all in favor of something happening as long as it is as long as somebody pays for it and as long as it's well run, which might be two tall orders at this stage of the game for the Democratic Party. Nobody has stepped forward and said they're willing to pay for it, not the state of Michigan, not the state of Florida, and not the Democratic National Committee.
Let's listen to Democratic Party Chairman Howard Dean. He made the Sunday talk show rounds, and on CBS, on Face the Nation, he was asked what is going to happen and what he's going to do about Florida and Michigan.
The first thing we're going to do is follow the rules. This is a close, very close race with two great candidates. They both can't win. It's very important for us to. We will beat John McCain if we're united. And in order to be united, The loser in the race has to feel that they've been treated fairly within the rules. That's how you keep the party united. So that's the number one thing.
What about a united party at this point, Jake? You've been on the campaign trail for months now. Is there a lot of hand-wringing going on, a lot of worrying about a divided party?
There is. We go through this anytime there's a really hotly contested fight. I remember in 2000, the fight between John McCain and George W. Bush. Obviously, there was a lot of bad blood. I'm not sure if every member of John McCain's campaign staff voted for George W. Bush that year. But this is a difficult contest. The attacks have not been as personal as some of the attacks on John McCain from Bush and his allies in South Carolina. But there are a lot of Democrats in Washington, D.C., who are very concerned with the tone of what Senator Clinton has been saying, because she has basically been saying that Barack Obama is not fit to be commander-in-chief. He's not prepared to be commander-in-chief on the national security front. And while she's been launching that attack, she's also been praising John McCain's experience and preparedness to be commander-in-chief. She has said that there's a commander-in-chief threshold that she has met and John McCain has met, and she has implied that Barack Obama has not met it. Now, the question is, Matt Dowd, who was one of President Bush's re-election head honchos in 2004, told me last week that basically Hillary Clinton is cutting spots for John McCain should Obama be the nominee.
Coming up for November. Yeah, I'd like to bring another voice into the conversation, Jake. With me in the studio now is Tom Fiedler. He's the former executive editor of the Miami Herald and now lecturer at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. Welcome to you, Tom. Thanks for coming.
Why, thank you. Hello, Jake.
Nice to see you. You know Florida.
Hey, Tom.
You remember the days of hanging chads and such. What's the answer here from your perspective in Florida and then in Michigan?
Well, Jake has outlined what the options are. I do think that the mail-in ballot is going to be the one that people will go to. There's even been discussion about doing some online voting here. We already do. The overseas Democrats, for instance, who are living abroad, they get to cast their ballots online. So I don't think that there is a particular barrier to doing something either in the mail or online, and it would be the least expensive way to go. There's also kind of an interesting bonus that sits out there if you go ahead and do the election late in the season, which is toward the end of May or early June. The Democratic National Committee had set aside a bucket full of delegates, so to speak, and they said you can get a 30% bonus if you wait until the very end of the primary season to cast your ballot. So we could find a situation here where if Florida and Michigan do their do-overs, they not only get the delegates that they normally would have gotten, but they're going to get a very big pop for doing it at the end of the year.
I want to listen now to Florida Republican Governor Charlie Crist. He was on ABC's This Week program this weekend, and he made it clear what he thinks should happen with delegates from his state.
I think that the Democratic National Committee should come to the common sense conclusion that the right thing to do is to honor that vote, recognize that vote, and seat those delegates.
What about that, Dom, about honoring the delegates that have already been seated?
You know, that's just not a starting position. It's clearly the one that Hillary Clinton would like to see, but it's absolutely not going to fly with Barack Obama. It's not going to fly with the Democratic Party here. So they really, they might as well push that off the table. I think what they're arguing for, the best thing that they could hope for, is what Jake touched on, one of these kind of cockamamie formulas where you put aside a certain number of delegates and you wait them and say that these delegates are to be based upon what happened in Florida on January 29th, and then the others you let fly with the results. But, you know, frankly, I don't think any of those are going to pass muster.
Under any scenario, Jake or Tom, will this go to convention? I mean, can Democrats go to convention shutting out voters in, you know, the fourth largest state in the country, Florida, and the eighth largest, Michigan? Can this go that far? Jake, you first?
Sure. I mean, absolutely. Democrats, you know, what did Will Rogers say? I don't belong to an organized party. I'm a Democrat. It's certainly possible. The credentials fight would be in June. I believe, or no, July perhaps. And the credentials committee process is a complicated one. I think there are something like 186 members of that committee. 25 of them are appointed by Chairman Howard Dean, and the others are, the other 161 others come from the states proportionally. There is anger at Florida and Michigan by the other states that abided by the rules of the Democratic National Committee. You know, there should be no mistake about why Florida and Michigan did this. They were trying to break the stranglehold on primaries that Iowa and New Hampshire have. That's why they did it. They thought that they were calling the DNC's bluff. And Howard Dean was not bluffing.
Tom, what do you think before we go to break here? Do you think this could go to convention?
I doubt very much it would, because the damage that this could do to the Democratic Party as they're trying to unite is so great that I think one of the two candidates would likely blink before they face a showdown.
This is On Point. We're talking about the big question mark for Democrats this election season, what to do about delegates from Florida and Michigan. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're speaking this hour with Jake Tapper, senior national correspondent for ABC News, and with Tom Fiedler, former executive editor of the Miami Herald, now at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. I'd like to take a listen off the top here to Michigan Democratic Senator Carl Levin, who is a supporter of Hillary Clinton, talking about what to do at this point, and he is pushing for a mail-in vote.
I think only a mail kind of a vote will work, and there's a lot of logistics that are involved in that, which people are looking at right now to see if it is possible. If it is possible, I believe it should be considered.
So with Senator Levin's comments as a backdrop, I'd like to bring into the conversation now from Detroit, Michigan, Bert Johnson, Democratic State Representative representing Michigan's 5th District. That includes parts of Detroit. He is supporting Barack Obama. Welcome to you, Bert. Nice to have you.
Hi, Jane. Thank you for having me.
So what are you hearing from your constituents about how to solve all this in Michigan and Florida?
A variety of things. Not necessarily so many solutions, but as a number of gripes about why we did this, how the process has not worked for the average citizen, the voters, and frankly, what are we going to do to fix it?
Mm-hmm. So why did you do it? I mean, everyone says you wanted to have more of a voice. Was that it?
That was it. You know, we believed here in Michigan, and number one, I want the listeners to understand that we fielded a letter from basically every one of our congressional leaders, including the governor of the state of Michigan and a number of big city mayors, including our mayor of the city of Detroit. We fielded a letter that essentially asked us to move the primary up, and the reason was simple. We wanted to put Michigan's unique problems, the uniqueness of what we're dealing with here, we wanted to put that in the national spotlight and have that be a focus of what was going to be talked about or bantered about around the country, understanding that a lot of other states languish with some of the same issues that we have here. And in understanding that, we were sensitive to that. And the second component of why we wanted to do it was that we simply wanted to get out of the habit of having Iowa and New Hampshire to essentially select who would be the nominee for president of the United States. Mm-hmm. So it was something that we were all sensitive to. It made a lot of sense to us. And at the time that we fielded that letter and discussed it in our private caucuses, and then when we went to the subsequent vote, there was no threat of anything that the DNC was willing to punish us, you know, for doing.
Mm-hmm. All right, that's the take from Michigan. We'd like to bring in now from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, Debbie Wasserman Schultz. She's a Democratic congresswoman representing Florida's 20th district, which includes Fort Lauderdale and Miami. She has endorsed Hillary Clinton. Nice to have you with us, Congresswoman.
Thanks for having me, Jane. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for being here. What are you hearing from your constituents about how to solve all this?
Well, and the bottom line for my constituents and for all Florida Democratic voters is that we want to make sure that our votes are counted. And the nerves are pretty raw here that it's 8 years after the 2000 recount fiasco and we're still having to insist on having our votes counted. You know, we don't want the Democratic Party to be the ones that have yet again disenfranchised voters in the state of Florida. And we've got to make sure that the Democratic nominee, when they are eventually selected, are selected by voters in all 50 states. So that's the bottom line for Floridians. I don't know that In fact, I'm pretty sure that most Florida Democratic voters don't care how it is that their vote counts and that we have a delegation seat at the convention. They just want to make sure that we do.
But what do you say to those who suggest that, you know, the rules were made, and 6 months ago the Democratic National Committee said, you moved your primary up, and so we're going to punish you, and this and these are the rules. And so both candidates abided by those rules, and now the playing field has changed, at least the Obama camp says it's going to, and how fair is that really?
Well, that ignores the fact that the voters in Florida didn't break any rules. What they did is they followed Florida law, which was set by the Republican legislature here, because our legislature sets the date of our primary. And Florida voters went to the polls when they were told by the state legislature and in Florida law when our primary was. This is not, you know, we're not a state that has the Democratic Party dictate the terms of when our primary is. It's the legislature that does that. So really, the voters in Florida are the victims here, and that's not right.
Here is Democratic Senator. Let me listen to this for a minute, Congresswoman. Here's John Kerry, who, of course, has endorsed Barack Obama, and he says his candidate did play by the rules.
I think the rules ought to be followed. I think that, obviously, Barack Obama believes very strongly that delegates from those states ought to be represented at the convention. And Barack Obama believes in inclusivity, but he also believes in playing by the rules, not changing them after the fact.
So, Congresswoman Schultz, where do we go from here? What's the answer, to your mind? How is this? What's the conclusion here?
Well, the conclusion is that we need to have the elected and appointed leadership of the Democratic Party come together and stop pointing fingers. I mean, I, you know, certainly have respect for Senator Kerry, but instead of you know, going on national television and pounding his fist about the rules, what we should be doing is coming together to try to find a solution. Because at least now everybody is acknowledging that both Michigan and Florida's delegations should be seated. Because unfortunately, Senator Obama's campaign has only recently begun saying that. So I'm glad at least they have now decided that it's a good idea to make sure that all the 50 states are represented at the convention, because if we go into the general election, Jane, with the perception that that Florida voters have that the possibility of the voters in Florida could perceive that the Democratic Party doesn't care about them, then we're going to have a real problem, because we're the fourth largest state in the country and the biggest swing state in any general election.
Bert Johnson, how is it that Barack Obama's name was not on the ballot in Michigan when voters went to the polls and Hillary Clinton's was?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because I think there are two conversations that have to be had here. I agree very much with the Congresswoman that we have to figure out a way to make these delegates, make these votes count. It's the people of Michigan, it's the people of Florida who stand to lose the most if they are not represented at the national convention. Likewise, it would do great damage to the Democratic Party if we didn't fix this, if we don't fix this in time. And I don't think we need to let it get to the point of the actual convention before we figure out something. But the first most important thing, I think, here is to understand that what Barack Obama and then John Edwards tried to do was to follow the rules, to follow the letter of the law that simply said if Michigan is going to move their primary forward, then they're not going to be sat at any convention. The delegates won't be seated. And likewise, your name should not appear on the ballot. I have great respect for Senator Obama and Senator Clinton and Senator Edwards, but two of the three decided that they should follow the rules. And I think that has to be pointed out, because as Michigan is punished by not being able to have its delegates sat, there has to also likewise be a punishment for breaking that rule and then having your name on the ballot. And so that's why I say that, because the conversation here in Michigan has sort of turned to, well, maybe we do an even split of the delegates. Well, I don't think that's fair under the process that's been undertaken and what has resulted from it. So it's one of those things where I know that there are some meetings that are going to be had this week with the National Committee to discuss how we deal with the issue, but I think we're simply facing the possibility of having to really do a redo to make sure that we can get people back to the poll to let them vote again.
Congresswoman, go ahead.
Thanks, Dan. I just wanted to add something to that because I think it's important to separate. I agree with Bert as well, but there is one clarification I want to make about what he said, because the candidates in Michigan stripped their names off the ballot because of the pledge. The pledge that the four early states asked the candidates to make to not campaign in Michigan or Florida. And I think it's really unfortunate, and I'm sure Bert would agree, that they decided not to campaign, because they didn't have to do that. The only thing that was part of the rules were that the DNC Rules Committee stripped both states of our delegations. the pledge and the commitment not to campaign in our states had nothing to do with the rules. So Senator Clinton made a decision not to take her name off the ballot because she did pledge not to campaign in the state, but she believed that going that one step further and not allowing Michigan voters to cast their vote for the person that they felt was the best candidate for president was going too far.
Jake
so
Tapper,
I think that's
let me
an important clarification.
Thank you, Jake Tapper. Let me turn back to you. You're hearing this debate. You've been on the campaign trail for months now. Can you describe what the average person is thinking at this point? This is such a complicated process, rules and redos and all this. Do you get the sense that the average voter understands what's going on here? How does that play into the process?
I was talking to a senior Democrat last year who was talking about this after the after the November 2006 Democratic victories in the House and Senate, when they took back the House and Senate, he was talking about how he anticipated 2008 would be an even better year for Democrats, but he said, don't worry, somehow we'll figure out how to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. And that's what a lot of this reminds me of. There's a lot of spin. I have a lot of respect for Congresswoman Wasserman Schultz, but she knows that the Democratic Party is not entirely blameless, even though, yes, the Florida legislature is Republican and Governor Charlie Crist is Republican, but that there were Democrats in Florida who were pushing for an early primary in the state
but
did not believe that the DNC.
The rules, Jake. We were pushing for an early primary, but we were not pushing to have one early that violated the rules. That was what the Republicans did.
In any case, I think that this fight over Florida versus Michigan in terms of the, just to answer Jane's question, plus the fact that there does seem to be a mess when it comes to Obama versus Clinton and what's going to happen. Neither one of them can achieve the magic 2024 or 2025, depending on how you count it, in terms of delegates. And so they only can win by wooing these super delegates. It's entirely possible, if not likely, that Senator Clinton will be behind Senator Obama in pledged delegates by the end of the contests. And she has basically said, her campaign has said, that they will try to win what they are now calling automatic delegates, which are the superdelegates. And I think that this is very, very messy for the Democratic Party. And I don't think that the average voter is aware of the intricacies of Michigan versus Florida. And Congresswoman Wasserman Schultz is completely accurate when she says that the reason Edwards and Obama took their names off the Michigan ballot was because of a pledge, not because of DNC rules. But in any case, I think the overall impression is just messiness, ugliness. If this ends up being a brokered and nasty convention, there'll be even more of that. And I think ultimately that plays into the Republicans' hands.
Let's go to the phones now and invite some of our listeners to our conversation here. Karen is on tap first from Waterloo, Iowa. Hi, Karen. Welcome to you.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking the call.
Certainly.
I'm a delegate, and so is my daughter, and we are both Edwards delegates. We have our first meeting this coming Saturday. And with regard to Florida and Michigan, if the states individually want to pay for a do-over, let them do that. But it has to be a do-over. The idea that the only person on the ballot was Hillary Clinton, so therefore she was the only one who got votes and automatically she gets those states, doesn't fly. And the other point is that there are a lot of us out there who are Edwards delegates. Mm-hmm. And I know of two of them, at least, who are going towards Mr. Obama, Senator Obama. And bottom line, I'm sick to death of hearing Hillary say that she'll split the ticket with him. Know this, at least two of us would not vote for a ticket that had Hillary Clinton on it. She can't be trusted.
Karen, thank you for your call. Tom Fiedler, let me turn to you and ask you about Karen's point. What about it's been referred to really as a dream ticket, both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama on the same ticket. Does that appease both camps? And what kind of pressure does that put on the number two, whomever it is, to accept?
Right. It appears to be appeasing the Obama camp less and less and less as this goes on. In fact, the offer to share a ticket, Mrs. Clinton's offer to share a ticket with Barack Obama seems now to have come back a bit of a boomerang, because it quickly raises the question, would she be suggesting on the one hand that he is not capable of answering that red phone at 3 o'clock in the morning, and yet he'd be capable of being vice president just a heartbeat away. So somewhere she is finding herself, I think, tangled up in a bit of a contradiction she's going to have to try to work out in the next few days.
Well, and in having an honest conversation about that point directly, and listening to some of the shows this morning that are broadcast here in the city of Detroit, it's just a disingenuous thing to suggest that another candidate who is just as viable, who in fact is leading in the race, should take the back seat and then somehow explore the option of becoming, you know, this great piece of this puzzle after the Senator Clinton is kind of running around saying how this guy is very inexperienced. She has 35 years of experience. When in truth, and this is just a real conversation, in truth, she is less legislatively experienced than he is. So it's just not the right thing to broadcast or to say publicly. If that's something that we get to, then we have to cross that bridge when we get to it.
Tom Fiedler, go ahead.
I want to go back to something that was talked about, the caller from Iowa there. And I believe Mr. Johnson mentioned this about the resentment toward Iowa and New Hampshire having such a large say. Frankly, I don't think it's so much that the states resent Iowa and New Hampshire, although there is some of that. But the problem really was the Super Tuesday on February 5th. That's what really proved to be frustrating to Florida anyway, because there was this sense of if you are one state in a choir of 20 or 21 states, however that ended up to be, whatever issues you have that you hope to be raised by the candidates, they will be lost in the clamor. And that was really what I think prompted the Florida Democrats. And it's a bit disingenuous for Congresswoman Wasserman Schultz to say that the Democrats were forced into that. The bill that actually moved the date was sponsored by a Democratic state senator.
Congresswoman Schultz, I know you have to leave us here, but one question before you go. You're a Hillary Clinton supporter. There are many possible scenarios here after redos, after mail-in votes, whatever it may be. If Barack Obama goes to the convention in Colorado in August, with more elected delegates, having won more contests, could he still fairly be denied the nomination?
I think there's a very great likelihood that he will be behind in the popular vote. So if she is ahead in the popular vote and he is ahead in he is ahead in pledged delegates, then I think that the purpose of having superdelegates will be even more essential. And so I think that right now there are 110 delegate difference between them. It is incredibly close in the popular vote and the pledged delegates. The primaries need to unfold. Voters need to have their say. And then at the end of the day, when the nominee is selected, every part of the process needs to be utilized. These superdelegates don't exist just to rubber stamp the decision of each individual state. And the other thing I wanted to add, Jane, is that Tom and I are good friends, and we go way back to when he was here at the Miami Herald in South Florida. But while the original bill was sponsored in the Senate only by a Democrat, ultimately it was amended into an overall elections package, which he knows that included ensuring that we finally have a paper trail in Florida and can have manual recounts. And there's no way that Democrats in the legislature were going to vote against that, since we've been fighting for that for 8 years. So I think that's an important point to note. And Governor Crist, who is now, you know, supposedly the champion for seating our delegates, even though their contest has been decided, is the one that threatened to veto that bill if it included a switch to February 5th.
Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz, I know you've got to catch a plane. We're out of time for this segment. Thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate your time.
You. Bye-bye.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about the high-stakes battle over delegates from Florida and Michigan. We're talking this hour with Tom Fiedler, former executive editor of the Miami Herald, now at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, and with Jake Tapper, senior national correspondent with ABC News, and with Democratic State Representative Bert Johnson from Michigan's 5th District. I'd like to start off this segment by playing a clip from Face the Nation on Sunday, when Democratic Senator Bill Nelson from Florida and a supporter of Hillary Clinton said that too much is at stake for the Democratic Party not to resolve this quickly.
The fact is that both Barack and Hillary have much invested to get this thing right, because if Michigan and Florida are not seated, it is going to be monumentally consequential.
Jake Tapper, who should be the Democratic Party nominee in terms of the candidate with the most elected delegates? Should it be the candidate with the most contests won, the popular vote? What is the standard?
Well, the standard is delegates. I mean, not just pledged delegates, but superdelegates as well. That's what this is, a race for delegates, as both parties, I mean, meaning the Obama campaign and the Clinton campaign, have said it numerous times. In terms of should be, that's not really my my role to assess. I mean, I do think that it's very clear that we're headed towards a scenario where you just heard Congresswoman Wasserman Schultz spell out, which is that Senator Clinton will likely be behind Senator Obama in pledged, earned, elected delegates by the time of the convention.
And so, Tom Fiedler, when you hear Jake Tapper say that, what about this other argument, the big states argument, that Senator Clinton said, well, I may be behind in that area, but we've won Ohio and California and Texas and New Jersey and New York, mm-hmm. and we'll win Pennsylvania. You know, that makes a stronger general election candidate.
Right. Well, I think what she's saying basically is this is the blue states argument. It says she's trying to suggest that if you look at the Electoral College, how that is apt to come out, then she would have an edge in that. And perhaps there's something there. That's clearly an appeal to the superdelegates to have them just sit down and think hard about what's going to happen in November and then go in that direction. And it discounts, obviously, a lot of the smaller states that Senator Obama has taken.
Hmm. Back to the phones now and to Mansfield, Connecticut, where Matthew is. Matthew, welcome.
Thank you for taking my call, Jane.
Sure.
You hear me okay?
Yes. We're listening. Okay. Go ahead.
I don't favor a redo. I think it's actually very unfair to the voters in Michigan and Florida. It seems to me, and the congresswoman brought up this point, it seems to me that it's the party leaders and the political leaders in Michigan and Florida who broke the rules of the DNC. And the people did the only thing that it was possible for them to do, which was to vote in the primary as it was scheduled and announced for their respective states. It seems to me the simplest solution to this is to accept the vote as it stands now, but bar the party leaders and political leaders who were responsible for breaking the DNC rules from going to the convention. Then everybody can be happy.
Matthew, thank you. You're laughing.
Well, that may slap the hand of some of the people who were the architects of all this, but it frankly, it doesn't solve the problem. Particularly, I think the Michigan issue, with all due respect to Mr. Johnson, for instance, it simply cannot be seen as any kind of a valid expression of voter intent. If people went to the polls for whatever reason, and they did not have the opportunity to choose among the Democratic candidates. At that point, that's when John Edwards remained viable. So Michigan, I think, clearly has to go over again. The Florida argument, 1.7 million Democrats participated. There were many other statewide issues on the ballot in Florida. So you could probably say simply that you didn't disenfranchise the Florida Democrats, because they did have the opportunity to have their votes count on other significant issues, and it was up to the party to decide whether their votes should count in the Democratic primary. So I think you just simply have to step back and say, hey, these were the rules. Right now, most Americans think Florida and Michigan are the same as baseball players on steroids. They did something wrong, and they've got to be punished.
Bert Johnson,
Jake,
you want to respond?
Oh,
yeah, Jake Tapper. Sorry. Jake, you go first.
Well, there's just one thing I wanted to add, which is this is all a great and important discussion. But mathematically, if you look at the next contests, the ones that are left, I guess there are 11 contests left, you could add Michigan and Florida to it, and you project that Hillary Clinton wins all of those contests, including Michigan and Florida. Let's say she wins 55% to 45%. She will still be behind Barack Obama in pledged delegates. It's important for voters to be enfranchised, and I don't disagree, but there is also a feeling among Democrats who are having this conversation of millions of dollars more are going to be spent, and it's not going to resolve what is basically a deadlock in this nomination.
And the end
fight
of the day really comes back to the superdelegates again. Bert Johnson, go ahead.
And I'll just say that I think here in Michigan we have a unique problem. We're probably going to have to simply raise enough money to do a caucus, not a primary, which would be significantly less than what a primary would cost. but more importantly, would give Michiganders the opportunity to actually come vote for who they actually support today. The construct as it was on the 15th of January was that we were going to vote for either an uncommitted candidate or Hillary Clinton, and contained in both that within the uncommitted candidate was both John Edwards or Barack Obama or anybody else that you wanted to support whose name was not on that ballot. I think the dynamic would change dramatically here in Michigan if, in fact, you had a head-to-head race between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. And the sentiment, and I hate that this sentiment is out here, I've heard from a number of people, some of them large community activists in this state and in this city, that if Hillary Clinton is the nominee, that they will not support her. And that is a problem that we have to decide at the ballot box, so that the perception of what happens with these delegates, if they were just cut down the middle and given to either one, does not rule out the voice of the average citizen here, or the person who goes to the ballot box. And I think the same has got to be done in Florida to make those votes count.
Tom Feeler, what about that? The Clinton supporters are primarily deep Democratic
right.
Party supporters. The Obama supporters are younger voters.
Right.
They're new voters to the process. So what does it
right.
do to them?
Well, I think actually that's a strong argument that the Obama campaign can bring to the superdelegates. It's just superdelegates in many cases are also office holders, and they're going to be on the ballot. The idea that the Obama campaign is apt to bring new Democrats into the election in November, and the likelihood is once you bring them in at that level, then they stay and participate with the party and other campaigns going forward. That is a very powerful argument. Frankly, I think it's a winning one.
Jake Tapper, you want to weigh in?
Well, just in the interest of fairness, the Clinton argument about why she would be a stronger candidate is that the working class Reagan Democrats who are supporting her, actually I don't know how many of them are Reagan Democrats, but let's just say working class Democrats who are supporting her in this nomination contest, and Latinos will be more up for grabs under the Clinton theory with a Obama-McCain matchup. And in fact, I'm sure Tom knows, there's a recent poll in Florida that indicates that Hillary Clinton among Latino voters outperforms McCain, but McCain outperforms Obama. Mm-hmm. So just in the interest of fairness, there's that.
All right. Thank you. Dale now, back to the phones, is calling from Coralville, Iowa. Dale,
Hi,
welcome to you.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was a very strong John Edwards worker, and I do think primaries are different from caucuses. We gather in rooms of hundreds and hundreds of people, and we talk to each other, and, you know, we finally come down to a consensus. And I always felt that John was the strongest, and he said he was going to stay in till the end, and you know, I was devastated. And so were my parents, who live in Florida, mm-hmm. my 87-year-old mother and dad, my 85-year-old aunt and uncle, all live down there. They're all Democrats.
Yep.
I talked to my mom last night, and she said, they don't even understand what's happening. They said, why did we vote?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, honey, you know, the rules were changed illegally, and that just can't be happening. I said, would you participate in a written revote? Because I firmly believe these people have been screwed over in two other elections. They have got to have their say this time, and it's got to be settled before the convention. We don't want a big row on the convention floor. You know, that'll just go against the Democrats winning the election.
Dale, thank you for your call and your thoughts. Tom Feeler.
There's actually, I think, a sweetener that can be added to this. The House Democratic leader in Florida, Dan Gelber, has proposed that this revote be a revote plus. And what he would do is include independents in Florida in this revote, so that it would be Florida plus independents. That would accomplish a couple of things. Now, I don't think the Hillary Clinton campaign would like that very much, but I think the Obama campaign would like that a lot. And I also think the DNC would like that, because it energizes independents toward the Democratic ticket, and it may energize them just enough to come up with the $4 or $5 million that's needed to do it.
A few more calls before we end up here. Marty is in Woodstock, Connecticut. Marty, welcome to you.
Hi, Jane. How are you?
Hi. Well, thank you.
Well, Jane, I'm not sure if I'm agreeing so much with the disenfranchisement argument. I think everybody's forgetting that
parties, no matter how important they are to our process, are still voluntary political organizations. And when the rules are broken, the party bosses in the states that are responsible have to explain to their voters why the folks who went to these primaries are not going to be represented at the convention. It's unfortunate. The average person probably doesn't understand what the heck they did or why they went to vote. But I'm suggesting perhaps 4 years from now that the National Committee can come up with a lottery system that I think would be fair for all, for everybody. So they can pick their dates, January, February, March, whatever the dates of the primaries they want to choose, Super Tuesday, forever, et cetera. They can have a lottery system with ping pong balls and have the states pulled. And those states will be the ones who are going to lead off, so that we can't have the arguments from the Honorable Congressman from Michigan saying that we wanted to put Michigan's case in the forefront for the national study, for the national review. This way, no state can step forward and take the spotlight, and Iowa and New Hampshire will have to take a back seat to the lottery. Hmm. I think that will be a fair system.
Terrific call. Thank you, Marty. Marty brings up a very interesting point about this complicated and very complex system and the need perhaps for some sort of overhaul.
Well, you know what? He's really putting his finger on it, and I think the issue is whether this process, as we've known it since 1972, can be sustained into another election cycle. Given the chaos that we see this cycle, I think the answer is no. There has to be another solution, and there has to be one where states like Michigan, for like it or not, or Florida, like it or not, where they feel that they are treated fairly. And I think the only way to do that, and it requires some federal law changes here and some favorable court rulings, is to have Congress step in, set the calendar, and then spread it out from February to June or something. And then every state at least would feel that it has a spot somewhere to raise its issues. Right now, that's broken down, and it broke down with, again, I think the Super Tuesday this year.
Jake Tapper, as far as a resolution to all this, who will play the biggest role ultimately? Is it Howard Dean and the Democratic Party chair? Is it the party elders? Who will step in here and resolve this?
Well, there's a lot of complaining right now about Howard Dean not doing enough to resolve this. The Obama campaign's attitude is the state Democratic parties need to work this out with the National Democratic Party, and they will abide by whatever is decided. The Clinton campaign has been all over the map. First, they wanted Michigan and Florida seated as is, and then there was actually an interesting 15-minute period where Senator Clinton completely changed her view on this. She was on her way to a press conference last week where she had a lot of generals, you might remember, and she did an interview with U.S. News and World Report in which she said she opposed any revote in Florida and any caucus in Michigan. And then 15 minutes later, she had a completely different position where she said she was much more open-minded. I think the Clinton campaign is starting to realize that their argument of, I can win the big states, I can win the swing states, the battleground states, will only be helped if these states are admitted, because they're not going to be admitted under the way things are now. I don't know that anybody's going to. The people talk about Al Gore stepping in, Jimmy Carter stepping in. You know, those are hypothetical scenarios. I think the states ultimately will work this out.
Bert Johnson, you wanted to jump in.
Yeah, I was just going to say we risk two things if we don't solve this and solve it very soon. There are a lot of young people who have been inspired and invigorated by, and I'm going to put it on the Democrats in full. I think the Democrats have done a great job at getting young people out to the polls this election cycle. If we don't fix this, and they begin to think that, you know what, it's an unfair process, and the things that happen by way of our own party are just not good, we're going to lose them. And losing them is not healthy for the party in the long run. The other thing that I think we need to be very careful of is the manner in which we allow negativity to pervade in this election. What I mean is simply this. I think people like Barack Obama are the new young blood within the Democratic Party. When we campaign ads to be run and things like that castigate the upcoming stars within the Democratic Party, it's akin to having the children to watch Santa Claus be shot on Christmas Day. It's just not a good thing. It's not healthy for us. So I think it's one of those things where you're going to have some gray hairs to come into the fold and have a conversation with people like Howard Dean and others in this state and in Florida to make a real decision about how to solve this and do it quickly and quietly. I think the honest conversation here in Michigan is that we just need to raise some money. There are a number of different organizations and people who are willing to raise money for the party so we can put on a caucus, have this contest go forward, have Michiganders be heard and seat them at the convention.
Tom Fiedler, running out of time here. I'll give you the last word.
I think the last time that the Democrats were in danger of losing young voters was in 1968 when the Eugene McCarthy and Bobby Kennedy backers decided that Hubert Humphrey, the party boss's choice, was not going to be for them. And they walked out, and we had Richard Nixon as president. That's a lesson Democrats don't want to forget.
Tom Fiedler, former executive editor of the Miami Herald and now at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government. Thanks so much for your time. Tom, thank you.
Thank you.
Jake Tapper, senior national correspondent for ABC News, joining us from Washington. Jake, thanks.
Thank you, Jane. It's a lot of fun.
Thank you. And Bert Johnson, Democratic State Representative from Michigan's 5th District. Appreciate your time. Thank you, Bert.
Thank you for having me, Jane.
Listeners, you can continue our conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.